present Doctor Who Short Trips. The Mist Puddle Murders by Simon A. Forward. Read by Sarah Sutton. Now, I'm sure you're wondering why I've gathered you all here. They were. Despite the social niceties of afternoon tea, there were a lot of darting eyes and surreptitious glances between sips, and a few fidgeting bottoms on cushions. Given that there wasn't a single human face among them, their expressions and mannerisms were surprisingly easy to read. The fact is, one of you here is a murderer. That set the cat among the pigeons, as the doctor would say, metaphorically speaking, since there were no actual cats or pigeons represented. A proud fox was enthroned in the armchair, while the sofa was occupied by a hedgehog, a squirrel, a badger, and a bat. Quite the unusual array of suspects. The tick-tock of the mantelpiece clock suddenly had the weight and gravity of a judge's gavel. In the quiet, you could have heard a pin drop. Although since one of these anthropomorphized animals was a killer, I hoped that there were no sharp instruments within easy reach. Plop. Plop. That was the sound of Tegan Javanka in the living room with the sugar tongs. She passed the freshly sweetened cup to Colonel Fortingbrush, who grunted and dipped his tongue into the beverage for a quick taste test before setting it down on the coffee table. Tegan turned her attention to the row of guests on the sofa. How about you, Professor Pricklethwart? One lump or two?
Oh, just the one for me, my dear, if it's not too much trouble.
Sweet enough as you are, eh, Professor? Tegan winked. She played her part admirably, despite the protest she'd raised when I first suggested she be the one to act as hostess. When I'd pointed out that surely serving refreshments with a smile had been part of her training as an airline stewardess, she'd given me such a look I thought for a moment there was going to be another murder, with me as the victim. But eventually she'd relented, peppering our preparations with a few snippy jibes to show she wasn't happy. Since the guests had arrived, she had done a great job of pretending to warm to the role. Plop! She dropped the cube into the steaming hot brew and handed the cup, perfectly steady, into the professor's waiting paws. He smiled and blinked over the tiny round spectacles perched on his constantly busy nose. Miss Tabitha Nutkins accepted her tea and attempted a dainty sip, but twitched at the wrong moment and accidentally produced an indelicate slurp. The Reverend Broccoli snuffled and shifted huffily aside, dodging the swish of Miss Nutkin's bushy tail and squashing poor Felicity Nightheart, the rather diminutive bat, further up against the end of the sofa. Miss Nightheart suffered the indignity meekly. Last to be served, her cup chimed and rattled in its saucer every time her leathery wings flapped in mild agitation. The Reverend's eyes were masked by dark fur, but he was obviously watching the clock. The quiet between the ticks and tocks stretched, as wide as that telltale gap in the middle of the sofa. Tegan indicated the plate of biscuits, inviting everyone to help themselves. Nobody moved. All the guests were sitting uncomfortably. I decided to begin. It was a moonlit night with moderate cloud cover, which was just as well because, as I understand it, had it been dark and stormy, I would be obliged to pick a different starting point for my account. Anyway, visibility was good as Tegan and I neared the end of our drive. We were on a mission to catch up with our friend, the Doctor. He had haired off, if you'll forgive the expression, in hopes of meeting the authoress and, well, your creator, Miss Lindsay Wood. Miss Wood, as we all know, established this beautiful community of yours. She brought you all to life, both in her fiction, in her colourful adventure tales, and in a very real sense, by virtue of her accomplishments in bioengineering. Quite the remarkable lady, and it's clear to me, having met all of you, having seen what she created here in this village, why the Doctor held her in such high regard. Our car was the only vehicle on the road that night, chugging and puttering loudly as we rounded that last bend in Marblebury Lane. Above those synthesized motor sounds, I was jolted from my map reading by the screech of tires and of Tegan. A shadowy figure scrabbled from the hedgerow to stand frozen, ever so briefly, in the beams from our headlights. We swerved violently, just in time to avoid a potentially fatal traffic accident, and crashed into the hedge opposite. After a few moments to recover ourselves, we jumped out of the car and ran to where we found you, Professor Pricklethwart, sprawled in the road. Your spectacles were askew and you were clutching your shoulder, where blood seeped into the corduroy of your jacket. I crouched to examine you while Tegan gave way to panic.
Hey, I did not panic. You did a bit. I was worried. We both were. The professor looked pretty banged up. I was.
Yes, indeed, you were, Professor. I have to be honest, it was my first encounter with a hedgehog of your size, not to mention one dressed in a jacket with leather elbow patches, and I won't deny I was a little slow to assess your injuries. But I could tell from my examination that they were not the result of any collision with our car. No. It was plain to see you were the victim of a gunshot wound. So some of you will be aware of what followed, but bear with me while I recap further, because the sequence of events is important, and the details will be more significant than some of you realise. We had to get the professor somewhere we could take proper care of him, quickly. So we brought him here, to Lindsay Cottage. You kept passing in and out of consciousness, Professor, so you may not remember events too clearly.
The briefest of episodes only. I believe you ladies left me in the car while you knocked on the door. The rap, rap, rap of the knocker kept jarring me awake. Yes, and your calls, pleading to know if anyone was at home. Miss Tegan's voice was particularly loud, as I recall. Oi, watch it, mate.
Yes, Professor, you had lost some blood, and I suspect the gunshot had rendered your hearing sensitive to loud noises. Still, after some persistence on our part, Ginger Hopkins arrived at the door. By this time I was adjusting to the idea of animals in traditionally human attire, so I don't think I was too taken aback to be met by a rabbit in a dressing gown. Accessorising them with Wellington boots was a bit odd, though. Yes, thank you, Tegan. She was full of concern, and if I wasn't mistaken, not a little frightened. And who wouldn't be, with strangers creating such a din at that time of night? But as soon as she saw Professor Pricklethwart in our car and noticed his condition, she ushered us in and played the gracious host and perfect nurse. That's right, she bustled about all over the shop, rustled up supplies, hot water, flannels, towels, bandages, the lot. Thank you, Tegan. Yes, we soon had you laid out on Ginger's sofa with the wound cleaned and dressed. And I'm glad to say it wasn't nearly as bad as it had first appeared out on the roadside.
Oh, yes, quite. It was almost distressing. I feel weak remembering, but the sight of blood has the habit of magnifying in one's mind.
I'm sure, Professor. But once we were all satisfied you would live, we managed to relax a little and breathe several sighs of relief. Tegan and I aren't keen on the idea of anybody dying shortly after we arrive anywhere. Anyway, Ginger was nice enough to offer us all tea to help calm everybody down a little more. You agreed we could all stomach some refreshment, and by the time tea was served, you were feeling strong enough to sit up. We introduced ourselves, Tegan and I, and explained that we had come here in search of our friend, the doctor. That was when Ginger Hopkins explained how Lindsay Wood had sadly passed away, that Lindsay Cottage, this house, had been her home, and that she had bequeathed it to Ginger. As to the doctor, she never got to tell us whether he had been seen around the village. Whether she had seen him at all, we may never know. Because at that point she succumbed to a choking fit. The cup slipped from her paw, spilled tea splashed all over the floorboards. You can see the stain right there where it soaked into the wood. There, down at your feet, Colonel Fortingbrush. Naturally, Tegan and I rushed to her aid, trying to find out what was wrong. But 20 seconds later, She collapsed in that armchair. Dead.
As luck would have it, Tegan and I are no strangers to mystery. It was all too soon before we knew there was nothing more to be done for poor Ginger, except to investigate, to see if we might track down her killer. We resolved to go about it in a methodical and thorough manner. We would leave no stone unturned.
Bah!
Yes, Colonel Fortingbrush?
And now here we all are while you prattle on. Either your investigations have proved fruitful or they haven't. Why on earth don't you spit it out, young lady? Tell us who this murderer is supposed to be.
Colonel, do please sit down and we'll get to you in good time. Park yourself and drink your tea, mate. Thank you. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. To cut a long story shorter, for the Colonel's benefit, the Professor helpfully pointed us in the direction of Miss Wood's laboratory in the basement, where I could examine the victim and analyse the tea things for traces of toxins. Tegan and I managed to manoeuvre Ginger's body down the stairs. We collected the fragments of broken china, the teapot, milk jug and sugar bowl, biscuits, everything that had been laid out. The laboratory facilities were rudimentary for the workplace of a bioengineer of Miss Wood's reputed calibre, but a brisk inventory of the storage cupboards persuaded me I had all I needed to start work. It was only by accident that I learned that there was more to one of those cupboards than met the eye, but that wasn't until much later. Meanwhile, I asked Tegan to head back upstairs to conduct a search of the rest of the cottage and, of course, to interview you, Professor.
Of course, I was shocked, but happy to assist in any way I could.
Of course. Tegan, perhaps if you'd care to take up our story? Ah, terrific. Are you sure you wouldn't rather have me butter some scones? Fetch everybody something more to eat? Tegan, please? Right. So I left Nyssa to work her science magic down in the lab. Professor Pricklethwart here was looking a bit worse for wear, pretty shaken up like we all were. So I started with a search of the place, top to bottom. Checked out the kitchen first. I figured just in case the murderer had been careless to leave out a packet of rat poison. There wasn't anything obvious. Then it struck me. Poor Ginger had been in her wellies. So I thought I'd take a tour round the outside. Sure enough, there were boot prints in the flower beds and a splintered frame where some joker had jemmied open a window. Which explained why Miss Hopkins had been so nervous. I mean, other than the fact of her being a rabbit, you know. She'd had a break-in and popped out to check, or maybe chase them off. Anyway, I slipped in through the window, found myself in the study. Had a quick poke around in there, tried to get some idea what any prospective burglar might have been after. There were a lot of beautiful framed illustrations on the wall. Character designs or, well, portraits, I guess. Portraits of you people and some of the other villagers, who aren't present because they turned out not to be part of our inquiries. None of the pictures looked to have been tampered with, but the desk told a different story. Ginger had been pretty busy with a journal, keeping copious notes on this idyllic little community of yours.
You had no business going through that.
Pipe down, Vicar. No badgering the witness. Anyway, thing is, there were pages ripped out of that journal. That's right, you can all gasp. That's what the thief had been after. So now we had a crook and a killer on the loose, and no guarantee they were one and the same. A possible poisoner and some maniac with a shotgun. The village of Lindsay Wood wasn't looking quite so idyllic as advertised in the brochures. And by brochures, I mean the dusty old volumes of Lindsay Wood's books the doctor left us when he raced off. You know how they all have that little map in the beginning? Like The Hobbit? No? Anyway, so I took the journal in to the professor to get the lowdown on it, see if we could figure out what was missing. By a process of elimination, we worked out that Ginger had good material on pretty much all her neighbours, except for two glaring omissions.
Yes, it was a simple enough.
Thanks, Prof. I've still got the floor here. Right, so Pricklethwart told me the tale of Ginger Hopkins. Gave me the pricey, anyway. The reason she was bequeathed this cottage was because she was Lindsay Wood's natural successor. Quite the creative bunny she took after your creator. Ginger was penning stories based on the lives of all the real characters in the village. She was continuing Miss Wood's work. And the missing pages told me a good deal more than any completed book might have done. It told me somebody didn't like their true story ending up in the pages of Ginger's journals. That added up to motive in my book. Motive to kill off poor Ginger. We didn't know yet why anyone wanted to take a pot shot at the prof, but if the shooter hadn't failed, that would have added up to something way uglier than you'd expect to find in a picturesque village full of woodland animals. Double homicide. Thank you, Tegan. All this time, as I said, I had been downstairs in the laboratory, examining the body and analysing all the samples we had managed to collect. It came as no surprise to discover traces of a deadly neurotoxin in Ginger's bloodstream. Of similar strength to the venoms found in poisoned dart frogs of certain regions on Earth, it would have acted within moments of entering her system. So cause of death was firmly established. She had brought out biscuits to accompany the tea, but she'd consumed none that I had seen. There were no traces of the toxin in the tea in the pot, or in the leaves. Ginger enjoyed her tea black, so that ruled out the milk. Which really only left the sugar. And Ginger Hopkins had quite the sweet tooth. I remember noticing her drop 3 sugar cubes into her cup. I tested a cube at random and found no trace. I tested another. Another. And another. Nothing. In fact, I may as well tell you all now, I tested every single sugar cube in the bowl and found nothing. It didn't make sense. Then I remembered you had sugar in your tea, Professor, so that pretty much eliminated the sugar as the culprit. Even so, I ran upstairs to check on you and see if I could collect some cuttings from the rug where Ginger's tea had spilled. You were feeling a little worse for wear after assisting Tegan with her investigations, but generally recovering from your ordeal. So we let you rest while we conferred. Tegan updated me on everything she'd learned, and we were both feeling a little tired ourselves, so decided to turn in for the night. We had no desire to go out wandering in the dark with a gunman roaming about. But we had a clear plan of action for the following morning. We left you dozing peacefully on the sofa, Professor, while we found the guest room, where I can't say either of us slept easily. We survived the night, as you can see, and we breakfasted with some care from among Ginger's kitchen supplies. Tegan was a little nervous about sampling the eggs, in case there were any human-sized poultry among the village residents who might take offence. I was more anxious about the possibility of poisons in some of the other foodstuffs from the larder. Anyway, we ventured out to conduct interviews with the residents of Lindsay Village, starting with you, Reverend Brockley. Although, on our way to the vicarage, we bumped into you, didn't we, Miss Neidhart? Outside the greengrocer's. Quite literally bumped into you, I'm afraid, and knocked your bag out of your hands. Baking soda, washing powder, flour, eggs and butter all over the pavement. Such a horrible mess, and I still feel so terribly sorry.
Is that meant to be a clue? Are we supposed to find all that significant?
Wait and see, Reverend. And by the way, can't you move up a little? There's room for 4 on the sofa, but you're squashing poor Miss Neidhart. It's most unseemly. Which is the point, of course, isn't it?
I can't think what you're implying.
Ah, come off it, Reverend. You know very well what Niss is implying. It's pretty obvious by that gruff tone and the way your hackles are up. Not to mention the gap between you and Miss Nutkins there. Besides, Reverend, we discovered all we needed to know when we arrived at the vicarage and found you not at home. Or rather later, when we moved on to Miss Nutkins' house and met you coming down the garden path. We greeted you and you politely inquired as to our business there, taking some pains to explain how Miss Nutkins had been distressed since Lindsay Wood's funeral and you had taken to ministering to her, guiding her through her grief. Yeah, consoling her.
I resent the implication.
Save it, Reverend. We know.
Tegan, please.
The fact is, Reverend Broccoli, your affair is your own. We had no idea what it was you and Tabitha were trying to hide, but since there were no references anywhere in Ginger's journal to either of you, it had to be one or the other of you who stole those pages.
Disgraceful!
We're not passing judgment on their relationship, Colonel. We're only interested in whether or not it pertains to the murder. Some misguided attempt to cover up the affair would qualify as a motive, although it would take a very careless criminal to rip out pages concerning only the two individuals implicated. Better, surely, just to destroy the whole journal. But perhaps it was too difficult. Knowing that Ginger was continuing Lindsay Wood's work, it might not have been so easy just to toss the entire book on the fire. Whatever the case, we asked around and learned what we could from the other villagers. And it was clear that your affair, Reverend and Tabitha, was not so secret as you may have believed. It's a small village, and people do love to gossip. Which is also, as it happens, how we knew where to find you, Colonel. Tegan and I went for a late morning stroll in Lindsay Wood, by which I mean the nearby woodlands named after Miss Lindsay Wood, not your creator herself, of course, although I understand that is where she is buried. Potentially confusing, I know. Anyway, you are all familiar with those woods. None more so than you, Colonel Fortingbrush.
It is where I most like to take my constitutionals, yes. It is exceedingly peaceful among the trees, and...
If peace is what you go looking for, Colonel, I very much doubt you would go armed with a shotgun. When Tegan and I caught up with you, we found you stalking through the bracken with your firearm cradled in the crook of your arm, thankfully broken and unloaded. But I wonder what might have happened had the weapon been primed and ready.
Nothing, I am certain. I exercise great care to establish just who or what is sneaking up on me before I fire, as I told you both when you questioned me.
Since you were picking your way through the bushes, Colonel, we reasoned there was no sense beating about them, so you'll remember we got straight to the point. Asked you what you'd been doing the previous night.
Just so. And I told you I enjoy a spot of grouse shooting. What of it? Day or night. I often can't sleep. Nocturnal blood, don't you know? Moonlight strolls. Good for the soul. And shooting relaxes me.
Tends to have a more dramatic effect on the target, I bet. We asked if you had shot anything that night. And I have to say you got a little on the defensive at that. But you did eventually admit to spotting something moving in the undergrowth and letting it have one barrel. According to you, you chased after it but lost sight of the beast, as you called it, in the dark.
Indeed.
But as we have established, it was a moonlit night. So I would contend that you saw enough to know exactly what you were shooting at.
Balderdash! Absolute poppycock! Why, I could say much the same of you when you ran over the professor in your motor car.
That is a very valid point, Colonel, and I thank you for bringing it up. Stepping forward, I stooped to pour myself a cup of tea, since Tegan had neglected to offer me any. But, Colonel, we know that you have good reason to dislike Professor Pricklethwart, and his silhouette is highly recognisable, I imagine, to those who know him. I put it to you that the shooting was no accident.
That is an outrage. You have no proof of all of anything of the sort.
Colonel Fortingbrush shot to his feet. He towered over the coffee table and locked his teeth in a silent snarl as his defiant gaze fixed on mine. Behind him, his brush bristled to about twice its resting volume. His paws were clenched fists and his monocle all but popped out. I continued to pour calmly. I was almost tempted to hum a tune to accompany the trickle of hot liquid. Tegan had helpfully pointed out how aggravating my calmness could be at times. But there was a danger that might have provoked him further. I set the teapot down. Nevertheless, Colonel, we do know of your night and daytime hunting habits, as they were recorded in some detail in Ginger's journal. Reading between the lines somewhat, I imagine she was considering a story of a fox adopting a very human approach to hunting. But you don't seem in the least bit ashamed of such a pastime, and I wonder whether the prospect of it being fictionalized would drive you to murder. For a moment, the Colonel did not appear to know what to do with that morsel. Eventually, he appeared to take it as a compliment. Slowly, he settled back down in the armchair and smoothed his tweed jacket into better order.
Well, all right then.
Oh, is everything all right, Miss Neidhart? You've hardly touched your tea.
My apologies. It is rather sweeter than I'd expected for two sugars.
Oh, yeah. That's because I sweetened the pot the way my Aunt Vanessa used to do. I always chuck one extra sugar in there.
What?
Professor Pricklethwart clutched at his throat. He coughed again, then began to splutter.
What have you done?
Oh, don't concern yourself, Professor. It's quite safe. But you're acting as though it's not. What's wrong? Something psychosomatic? None of that scientific mumbo-jumbo. I reckon it's all in his head.
No, not at all. I was merely... What?
The truth is, Professor Pricklethwart, we asked Miss Neidhart to bring sugar, replacing all of Ginger's supply. In return, we offered her the pick of Ginger Hopkins' larder. We don't have any local currency, and it was all we could think of to make it up to her. Especially as it was all her spilled groceries, all the mixed ingredients on the pavement that provided my eureka moment. One lump or two? That was the key. Or three in Ginger's case. Different sugar cubes laced with different biochemicals, only lethal when combined. The fact is, there was one other individual missing from Ginger's notes, and that was you, Professor. Because there were two people continuing your creator's work. Ginger with her fiction, and you with your researches.
Yes, we're all aware of Pricklethwart snooping,
asserted Reverend Broccoli. And Colonel Fortingbrush grunted agreement, while Tabitha Nutkins twitched more than usual.
The studies,
Pricklethwart amended, his shiny nose greatly put out. Regardless, everyone around town mentioned your observations. Call it spying or scientific study, it wasn't popular. And that was your little arrangement with Ginger. You supplied her with notes in return for access to the laboratories downstairs. Visibility. That should have been my first clue, staring at me in the headlights. Not to mention the artificially added noise of the motor car. Running out into the road like that, Professor. You must have seen and heard that car coming a mile away. Just as Colonel Fortingbrush must have seen you when he fired. Oh, don't stress, Colonel. I believe you only wanted to scare off a bothersome observer. Unfortunately for you, the Professor wanted to get shot. He staged it all, earning himself a wound to show for his troubles. Then he raced down to the village, looking for a sympathetic audience who would believe him to be a victim. Tegan, if you would... Professor Pricklethwart leapt to his feet, but Tegan was on the case. She grabbed a pair of oven mitts from where she'd set them on the sideboard and apprehended the hedgehog before he'd made it very far. Interestingly, he'd chosen to bolt for the door to the basement, perhaps to lock himself up in his laboratory. Perhaps we should have let him run down there. Smiling, I rapped on the door. It opened to reveal the doctor. Everyone, this is the doctor. Doctor, everyone. The doctor doffed his hat, let it fall neatly back on his head, then proffered a handshake. Hello, how do you do? Ah, Professor Pricklethwart, I don't believe we've had the pleasure. You've had me at a disadvantage. His enthusiasm was often contagious, but in this instance it was almost weaponized. Pricklethwart shrank from the friendly gesture, obliging Tegan to back up a step, although she kept those oven mitts on his shoulders to guard against him straying too far.
Doctor? What are you... I don't understand. How...
Oh, passingly well, thank you, Professor. Not too bad for being cooped up in a refrigerator. Luckily, Tegan and Nyssa found the secret laboratory tucked away behind one of the chemical cupboards and released me earlier. A short while after lunchtime, I think, if the smell of egg salad and cress sandwiches on their breath was any indicator. He presented his hand again with an ever more earnest smile. Now come along, Professor. Let's shake on it. No hard feelings.
Well, really, I must say, you are a most gracious gentleman, sir.
Pricklethwart inched forward and extended his paw. Oh, I always prefer to be civil, especially to a fellow scientist, even those who try to experiment on me. The doctor grasped the professor's paw and shook it energetically.
Come now, Doctor. I merely wish to sample some of your cellular tissue. Applied properly, its unique regenerative qualities might have helped combat the degenerative human condition which plagues so many members of our little community. Really, illicit affairs, hunting and more besides, it is a most disturbing trend and I wish to... Ow!
The doctor tugged Pricklethwart's arm to full stretch, and in a flash his other hand pounced from his pocket to spray the professor with a medical aerosol. As I say, Professor, no hard feelings, although that may be a bit chilly. He pocketed the aerosol. It goes against the grain a bit, spiking hedgehogs, but needs must, I'm afraid.
Oh, what? What did you do? What was in that?
Pricklethwart rubbed his arm where the solution had touched him. He stared at it as though expecting it to swell. Oh, just a modest little cocktail I whipped up in your lab while Tegan and Nyssa were concluding their investigation. You disappoint me, Professor, gravely. In seeking to stem this degenerative human condition, as you put it, you succumb to the worst of human behaviour. This is justice, of sorts.
Justice? What kind of justice comes in a medispray?
Morality, Professor. A chemical moral compass, if you like. A behavioural governor. Any time your thoughts turn to evil, this will reverse that human condition of yours. You will slowly revert to your animal self. Think about that. Loss of higher brain functions, loss of self-awareness, loss of all that scientific knowledge.
But that's... You can't do such a thing to... It's
inhuman, suggested the doctor. Remorse should counter it. Good deeds, that sort of thing. Generally being a good villager. With no police available, it's up to you to police yourself. It's just a pity that you have to be made to do that.
I'm sorry.
Then that's a start. Really, Doctor? A morality serum? We had delivered the car to the garage where we'd hired it, and the doctor led us in a brisk jaunt back to the TARDIS.
What?
That's a very sceptical look you're giving me, Nyssa. You doubt my science. It's no reflection on you, Doctor, but a chemical conscience? I'm just not sure even with your command of biochemistry you could whisk that up in 2 hours, especially with your brain barely finished thawing out. And you from a union founded on people being terribly nice to one another. The doctor tutted. He strode breezily onward. Vaulting over a stile, he waited on the other side as Tegan and I clambered over. Well, it's true that without access to something like the source, I might have struggled. A bit. But sometimes all you really need is the idea. And ideas take hardly any time at all. We carried on up the field. Won't he suspect? Won't he try to concoct a counteragent? A cure? Oh, perhaps. But I expect the doubt alone will keep him honest. I don't know. I'm all for rehabilitation, but it seems to me the hedgehog got off lightly. Shouldn't he be punished properly, Doctor? By whom, Tegan? Lindsay Wood left her creations no judges, no prisons. There at the top of the field, the TARDIS waited. And I'm a doctor, not a policeman. The doctor hurried to the blue box. He paused in the doorway. The the irony of the signage above his head completely lost on him. Or probably not.